Welcome to We Are The Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are The Watchers.
I've just been on this Game of Thrones theory, theory rabbit hole on the internet recently. I'm out of control.
A lot of people got a lot of thoughts.
Oh, they got all of the thoughts.
Some of them are going to be right. Many of them are going
to
be wrong.
Yeah. And then you get confused as to which one should be right or wrong. Mm. Oh, I tell you what, they're trying to get as many little bits of tasty clue morsels from the prequel book at the moment. A lot of people are referring to that. Well, as you may know, in chapter 4, they talk about this. Therefore, it must be about Tyrion. I don't think it is. He wasn't around then.
Yep.
That was one about how Tyrion could be a Targaryen.
Sure. Yeah, he's the bastard. His father hated him.
But that theory's been around for a while, anyway.
It has.
So
that he's the rider of the third dragon. That dragon's dead.
Mm-hmm. And we know who's riding it. Is it Bran? Welcome to We Are The Watchers, episode 62. Tom, we've gotten here to number 62 and we're feeling pretty confident about the next few weeks. We've got some big weeks coming up, actually.
There's lots. I'm already at a backlog of stuff just from this week and I'm dreading a few more weeks. And
stuff's going to return.
Yep.
We've got to be prepared.
I'm going to start making old man noises.
You should. Very good at it. Dear, oh, dearie me. Of course, as usual, have a lot to talk about news-wise. There's been some announcements in terms of just all different stuff, but awards. We won't get into the Oscar nominees too much.
We don't need to. We'll talk about that when the Oscars are coming closer.
That's exactly right. But there are other newsy bits and pieces. I've been doing a lot of watching.
Mm.
I had a bit of a back catalogue, so we couldn't get to everything last week.
True.
See how I go if I manage to actually get to it all this week.
Well, how about I keep the news a little bit shorter? I've only got a few highlights. They're good highlights.
Yeah, I've only got a couple as well, so.
Nice.
Crack on in.
All right, firstly, this is a small thing, but I'm very excited. So Adam Ruins Everything has got a special guest this week.
Who?
Well, they're doing an episode about video games and the stereotypes and myths around video games that the media loves to push.
I am wanting to watch this.
And who have they got on board to play the devil? Who's working in a video game store selling evil stuff to kids? Weird Al. Al dressed as Satan in a video game store.
See, at first I was going to guess Dave Grohl.
Well, it's very similar, yes. It looks like it might even be a bit of an homage to that.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah. Last week's episode was really good. It was Adam Ruins a Sitcom. And it looked like it was just going to make fun of the structure of sitcoms, but it instead turned into like a half-hour full-on discourse about how harmful stereotypes can be.
Ooh. So it started lighthearted and then went
It didn't get heavy, but it was kind of like, haha, you know how sitcoms always make the joke of like, oh, don't invite your black friend to a pool party because black people can't swim. It actually went into the history of how segregation meant that black people weren't allowed into swimming pools, and that's why 70% of African Americans never learned to swim.
Unbelievable.
And so a lot of like stuff that just gets thrown away yuck-yucks in sitcoms and actually shone a light on where that joke comes from, where you go, terrible.
Right.
I've been laughing at that.
Fascinating, though.
Very, very interesting.
Enlightening.
And done in a not a preachy way.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Good work, Adam Conover. Keeps bringing that thunder.
He does the job real well. I saw a quick thing that Netflix is bringing back Unsolved Mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I remember watching that.
Yeah, it was open-ended.
Was there an Australian Unsolved?
There would have been.
I feel like there might have been. Or a show very similar to it.
Yeah, I don't think it had the same name.
Yeah. But this one, Unsolved Mysteries, back in the...
Was that the one that had, I want to say, Lance Henriksen hosting?
I don't know his name, but he was very sort of...
He was in Alien and Aliens as Bishop the Robot.
He's Android. Very robot-y, this guy.
He also had his own X-Files spin-off called, I want to say, Millennium.
He's almost got a bit of a... Cancer man, smoking man, whatever.
Yeah, I think we're both talking about Lance.
Well, he's not going to be there.
Well, he's passed away.
Yeah, therefore making it difficult.
But who are they going to get?
I don't know. They haven't said. But one thing I found was interesting was that all the original producers, well, not all of them, but a lot of original producers are on board with this
sure.
remake, or not remake, revamp.
Yes.
And And Stranger Things executive producer Sean Levy is part of it as well. Mm. So I'm intrigued to see what sort of spin Sean puts on it.
Yeah.
It should be interesting. I don't know when it's coming out, but it looks like it's going to be more of a global unsolved mystery as opposed to just in the US.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Netflix is global.
Exactly. And look, the purpose of those shows back in the day used to be that at the end, you know, you'd show the milk carton with that person missing. If you have any details on this person's whereabouts, please get in contact. Mm. Now Netflix, open it up a lot more. Yeah, I'm on board with that. Who do you think they should get to host it?
I think they've got to find somebody quite serious. But also at the same time, you're watching a show. See, there's a fine line because you're watching a show that people will watch with nostalgia eyes, mm-hmm. which is always has a bit of a, not yuck, but there's a slight hamminess to nostalgia programs. But you're dealing with people who are missing.
Yeah, so there needs to be some seriousness.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm wondering who would be good. I would like to see Dean Cain simply because that would be awesome.
He did a, not Mystery of the Museum,
no,
but one of those
Ripley's
type shows.
No, Ripley's Believe It or Not, I reckon. So he could do a bit of hosting. Who do you see as someone who would be worthwhile employing?
John Hamm.
John Hamm.
Because he's got that serious gravitas, but he's also a really, really funny dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he could, I don't know, he has such an authority, his stance.
Great casting.
I'd be down with that. And I think he'd have a lot of fun.
I don't think he's in anything regular, like no sort of Mad Men regular role at the moment.
No,
so.
He's been doing a lot of film stuff. We'll talk about, I saw him in a film this week.
Oh, cool.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
They announced that Suits is ending with season 9. They're doing a 10-episode season this year to wrap things up. Potentially, there's going to be another love triangle. I stopped watching years ago, so I don't know who between.
I didn't even start. I watched a couple of random episodes that were sort of halfway through a season,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know what was going on or who any of the people were.
I have a lot of friends who love, love, love Suits, and they're like, you'd love Suits. And I sat down and watched a bit, and I thought, I don't love Suits. I can see why other people enjoy it. It's just not my bag.
It was one of the shows, at least here in Australia, when Netflix first came out. It was on Netflix,
yeah.
and a lot of people sort of binged-watched it. And the general consensus at the time, at least with people that were recommending it to me, which I never got into watching it, was that the first couple of seasons, maybe two, possibly three seasons, are really good, and then it starts to sort of go down a bit.
Right, okay.
Some people continued, but I do know of a few people who sort of gave up at that point.
Sure.
But that's the nature of streaming stuff. There's so many other options.
Exactly.
You can't
watch everything.
Which is, that's going to be a bit of a theme of something that I watched. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
I saw that Gillian Anderson is going to join The Crown in season 4.
Oh, pip,
she'll be playing Margaret Thatcher.
Ah.
Now, this is, don't get too excited about it because
I'm not.
They haven't even started season 3 yet.
Right.
So we're talking probably 2020.
Yeah.
But Margaret Thatcher, they're going to have to, I mean, I know she could do the accent very well because she naturally does English and American and can flip between the two of them. But I'm interested to see how her makeup is and how she goes opposite Oscar nominee Olivia Colman, who will be the new version of the Queen. And you think with Margaret Thatcher, season 4 will have to be around the late 70s, early 80s. Because that was when Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister.
Yeah. So
potentially only a couple more seasons after that.
Unless we start getting future queens.
people would watch that.
Sure, why not?
Other news?
Yeah, so this Sopranos prequel film I've been following, they announced that James Gandolfini's son, Michael, is going to be playing Tony Soprano. That's awesome.
I like this.
He looks so much like him.
If there's anybody that you want to play, you know, somebody of that stature, like that character was huge, iconic.
Mm.
To have the man's son play him, it's pretty cool.
It's very appropriate.
It really is.
Can you believe Gandolfini died in 2013?
And we're up to 2019 now.
No, that's so crazy.
It's gone really quickly.
Listeners, if you want a great James Gandolfini that you might not have seen him in, check out a film called In the Loop. It's from Amando Iannucci of Veep and The Thick of It.
Oh, yeah.
It is a continuation kind of The Thick of It, and it's about a British politician really puts his foot in it and potentially kicks off World War III.
Ooh.
James Gandolfini is a former war veteran general who's now a politician.
American.
Yes, and plays completely against type. He's actually like the one good person in politics. He's very, very endearing. Swears like a sailor in it. It's fantastic. He's so rude to everybody, but he's got a heart of gold.
So was that before, during, or after Sopranos?
Well after. This would have been about 2011, 2012. It wasn't long before he passed away.
Right.
But just awesome film.
Look, I saw something just really quickly today that Queer Eye will start their next season with, which will be season three, with some special episodes four, I believe, where they're heading off to Japan.
Ooh.
I know that they came to Australia for
maybe
one.
Are they
going to hang out
with, is her name Marie Kondo?
Yeah, they might do that. That would be a whole
spark
heap
some joy.
Of fabulousness and politeness at the same time. Mm. But yeah, look, I don't know too much about it at the moment, but they just went on to say how much fun and what a wonderful opportunity it was for them to work
awesome.
Over there.
Have we heard anything further as to whether they're going to do the celebrity episode?
Haven't heard.
Because there was so much chatter that they were going to do Post Malone and make him over. He's the rapper with face tats and doesn't wash.
Now, there was a face tatted rapper. I don't think it was Post Malone, but somebody who had colourful hair and lots of face tats went to jail recently. So maybe that's it's a different guy.
There's
though.
A whole bunch of them. There's SoundCloud. There's Ecstasian, but he passed away already.
That's quick.
A lot of them. The scene is very opiate is a kind of description, but they're very into pain meds.
Okay,
and that sort of stuff. That's where they all rap. Like a bit slower, and it's taking their toll. It's toll, you know.
You can imagine.
It's kind of similar to the heroin chic of the early 90s of grunge.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on with poppers.
The show with a car that time travels at 88, but blows up if it drops below 50. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I was pretty impressed to hear about this. So Miller World is a comic company that is run, owned, created, blah, 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 everything by a guy named Mark Miller, who's very famous in the comics world. He's the guy who wrote Civil War for Marvel.
Yeah, right.
And he's the guy that wrote The Ultimates, which was taking the Avengers that we knew them and putting them in the real world. And that's what the basis of the films has been about. He also created and wrote Kick-Ass. And he's
done a lot.
He's an ideas machine. Mm. He also did Secret Service with Colin Firth and whatnot. So about a year ago, I don't know if it's sold, but Netflix got into bed with Millerworld and now has like first rights at any of his creations. So
when you heard that news, have you since then just sort of been hanging out waiting to see
first ones?
Yeah.
And like they've already, Netflix is experimenting with a comics publication wing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to start publishing his comics and stuff. But they announced this morning that the first major one that they're going to be doing for Netflix, it's called Reborn. It's going to be directed by the Lego Batman movies, Chris McKay.
Gee.
And Sandra Bullock is going to produce and possibly star.
I did see a headline about Sandra Bullock and further productions of...
So this comic was fantastic. It's six issues and it's about an 80-year-old woman.
Read it?
Yes. I think it finished last year. Mm-hmm. And it's drawn by a guy named Greg Capullo, who was one of the best Batman artists of the last 10 years. This story, an 80-year-old woman on her deathbed says her goodbyes and everything, passes away and wakes up in the afterlife that's entirely based around her. Everyone she's ever known that has died was waiting for her, except for her husband. And she's got to set out and find her husband and lead these people against an army that's made up of every nightmare she's ever had.
Wow.
Also, she's back in her like pristine youth body.
This sounds
so you could
right
have
up my alley.
You could have Sandra,
right?
I know. You could have Sandra Bullock playing different ages of her own lifespan where she's flicking through her dreams, her memories and everything like this. She's desperately trying to find her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole thing there that I won't delve into. Her dog, like her golden retriever from life, is now like a falcor, like a giant thing she can ride.
That's so cool.
Her father that she'd been super close with, who'd passed away 40 years, is there as her general.
Nice.
It is beautiful story about accepting the afterlife and not having regret over what you didn't accomplish in life because there's a chance you might accomplish it later.
And the quest, it's finding the husband.
A big heroic quest. It's fantastic. And so I'm really excited for this. She may not end up being the star.
Yeah, it hasn't said anything about that yet.
Look, she wants to be involved with the film, but she's producing it, and like she's making it very clear that after Bird Box she wants more Netflix stuff. But this is
sensible.
This is a great property for her.
So have they gone into detail about how it's going to be presented?
No, they haven't even, I couldn't even see if it was definitely going to be a film, miniseries.
Because it could end up being something like a limited series like, what was that one with Emma Stone and that weird one.
The crazy one with Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
I can't remember what that's called, but
that,
yes.
Yeah, limited season like that where it's this, just that.
It could.
Would it lend to that?
Yes, it couldn't be an ongoing. Uh-huh. It has a definite end. Okay. Like it was a 6-issue series. That's it. And it wasn't created as a here's the story afterwards or it continues on. Like it's a this is the story of her entering and finding her place in the afterlife and then it ends.
I feel quite confident about Netflix with this one because if it went to a movie house, they would have to condense the 6 episodes into one movie.
Yep.
If it went to if it was part of old school television, it would be elongated into a whole season. Netflix are not scared of doing 6 episodes.
And I think this could wear out its welcome if it was any longer.
Yeah, okay.
You know, there are moments in there that are really heavy. A lot of it's built around grief and that idea of she lived so long after everyone else that she loved died that she almost had survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's meeting these people in the afterlife and realizing that they held no ill will that you stayed on.
Yeah, right.
You know, through you, they continued to live somewhat, this sort of stuff. I don't know. It's wonderful, beautiful themes and stuff. It's got real potential.
I'm hyped about this now.
Yeah.
Anything else in the news?
Two little things. One, and I don't know any details about it, anything more than Shanghai Disneyland is going to be getting a Zootopia land.
So you'll be there?
Oh, yeah.
You're off to China.
Yep. As long as they have a DMV I can go into with the slow sloth animatronic.
That's all you need?
That's all I want. So badly.
Sounds great.
Yes. And then the final one. I've kept the big story for last. I mentioned something about this to you earlier, so it's not a surprise for you. But Skittle, I follow really closely the Super Bowl ads. I don't care too much about the merch. It's some of the most watched primetime television in the world every year.
Mm.
And Skittles and Dorito are the two that always do something weird.
They're the big ones.
Well, there's people that spend more and do bigger, flashier ads, but these are the two that people talk about afterwards because they do weird stuff.
They must keep the advertising company. They must, you know, not swap around. Like they're on a good thing. People must just be like hanging out for that deal. We want the Doritos deal.
It's
yeah,
very competitive. If you can be producing stuff for a Super Bowl ad, you're making a mil minimum.
Wow.
You know, because a placement can go between 2.8 and 4. I think last year was up to 4.2 mil. US
Jeez.
For 30 seconds.
That's insane.
So Skittles this year have decided they're not going to do a Super Bowl ad. They're instead going to do Skittles commercial, the Broadway musical. So it's a one-off performance of a musical specially written for Skittles at the Town Hall Theatre in New York City at 1 p.m. on the same day of the Super Bowl.
That is too good.
It's starring Michael C. Hall, a.k.a. Dexter.
Yeah.
Who's hot off doing, you know, being Bowie in Labyrinth and all sorts of cool stuff. It's so fucking weird.
Like, in the best possible way, though.
Yeah, but everything about this, like they put out a little promo video for it and it was Michael C. Hall talking to his psychologist about how he feels like he's gone too commercial and sold out. He doesn't want to do ads anymore. And all this goes on. And then the camera pulls out and he's doing this performance live on a theater where everyone breaks into applause and gives him a standing ovation. So he seems clearly on board with having some silliness with it.
This is great.
But a Skittles half-hour musical.
You know they were workshopping, they were powwowing, and someone came up with that idea as a half joke. But sort of, you know, that little acorn of a thought in the back of their head went, I'm going to say this out loud. They'll probably laugh at it. But if they're intrigued, I've got more I can tell them.
So I once pitched a musical back
Did
in the
you?
Day. Yeah, we were doing promotion for, I want to say, the second Wolverine film. I can't remember exactly because I've worked on, I think, 3 Wolverine films. In a heated, crazy concepting session, I threw out the idea of why don't we do a Wolverine musical because Hugh Jackman sing and dance. Now, the client didn't go for it. Which was a shame because I stayed up for 3 days and wrote.
Damn. Damn.
Like just on spec, 25 minutes of what a potential musical could be.
Damn.
And, you know, I've done jingles and things in the past, so I wrote a bit of music and I wrote some songs, //, why are these hands so sore? All this sort of ridiculousness.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
And everyone got super excited about it in the room and the client was really excited, but the lead time to try and write music and things like that is like 2 years.
Oh, is it?
It's so long. So I feel pretty confident that someone had that idea that you're talking about there 3 years ago in a meeting and it sat there and festered in someone's heel, like they got a bindi in their heel.
Yeah.
And it's dug in and dug in and they haven't let it go and they've come in a year later and gone, here. And they've had friends come and perform or something. Like they've done the work to get this across the line.
Unbelievable. To think that there is now a, you know, musical Broadway book about a Skittles musical.
Uh-huh.
Insane.
Yep.
Oh, it's so fun.
So apart from the idea of being so cool, just because I have the inside knowledge of how difficult it is to try and do a musical commercial spot.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed because you're right. That's one person's idea and they have not let that go. And I feel confident they've said, if you don't make this, I'm leaving. I'm quit.
Mm.
It's that sort of ultimatum.
Wow. So it's going to be on Super Bowl day.
On the Super Bowl day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
And what are they doing? Just streaming it? Like
I think so. I don't really know. Maybe you've got to go to Skittles.com.
Maybe.
Maybe they're going to hire someone to be in a Skittles costume to run around at the Super Bowl telling people to go and check it out.
Oh, this is crazy.
It's just
in the best possible way.
It's just great stunt marketing.
You're right, you did leave the most amazing news story.
Yep.
For last.
So that's news. Did you see any trailers?
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
I only saw two quick ones.
Go for it.
One is for Happy Season 2.
Oh, yeah.
Happy, you'll recall, is about the disgraced detective who has an imaginary blue unicorn friend. And in the first season, they had to fight a Santa. They had to fight a crackhead junkie Santa who was kidnapping children in order to give them to a CEO of a company who had a cockroach-based sex dungeon. It's a really weird show.
Well, the whole blue unicorn thing sort of set it off a bit.
Yeah, that sets the tone, but it gets weirder and weirder. So the first season completely adapted all of the comic, so I didn't know where they'd go. And season two's theme is Make Easter Great Again.
Oh, okay. I see what they're doing.
Yes. So season two will be rolling around in time for Easter.
There you go.
And it looks like there's a messed up bunny.
Of course. There's been many messed up bunnies. Uh-huh. Like off the top of my head, I know it wasn't an Easter bunny, but Donnie Darko's bunny.
Yeah.
And then the other messed up bunny is from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Sure. And then I will also throw Harvey in the mix, which is kind of a friendly imaginary bunny, but there's some dark undertones about insanity in the mix there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know why people in rabbit suits are so unsettling, but they really are.
It's like the only step up from that is clowns. People.
Oh, I don't talk about clowns.
Yeah, I know.
The other one was the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer.
And?
It was fantastic. I'm very excited. Spidey is off to Europe. There's no clues given as to when exactly in the timeline this fits. It could be before Infinity War and that could very well be afterwards. Maybe there's some timeline shenaniganery we're going to see in Endgame that will reset things and take him back.
Because this is going to be released after, isn't it?
Correct. It's the first film after Endgame. So it's technically the beginning of Phase 4 for Marvel.
So what are you going to do in terms of trailers? If they release another couple, are you going to sort of step away?
I'm going to watch them. Because there was a ton of cool stuff hidden in this.
Uh-huh.
So we saw Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm.
Gyllenhaal.
Donnie Darko.
Yes, who is playing a character called Mysterio.
And he looks very, I don't know, there's a certain look they're going for, and I think whatever that was, they've landed it.
Yes, and they're being a bit tricksy with that trailer because it makes it look like he's coming to help Spider-Man, and I think instead he's pulling a bit of a syndrome from Incredibles and he's organized those bad guys so he can look good.
You bit of gear.
Yeah.
Jakey boy.
Yep. And there's one shot of Mysterio from behind where he's flying up and you can see the bubble helmet on.
Yeah,
so
great.
Just, he's... Spider-Man calls him Fishbowl because the dude wears a bubble helmet. It's so dumb.
But the best possible way.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited for that, especially because someone had this great idea. They were like, well, the first one's Spider-Man Homecoming and the second one, Spider-Man Far From Home. The third one needs to be that Spidey's now working for the Avengers properly and the Avengers all go out on a mission and forget Spider-Man at home. At the same time, Spider-Man's worst enemies come to Avengers Tower to attack. So we can have Spider-Man Home Alone. Yes. And it's just him setting up traps within Avengers Tower to take down all his villains.
You know there's going to be a Macaulay Culkin cameo, right?
It has to be.
Yeah.
Or Daniel Stern as a bad guy.
Ooh.
Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
I don't know if Joe would get involved with that, but Daniel Stern, he's probably keen for some work.
Wasn't he the voice of Kevin Arnold in The Wonder Years?
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, Spider-Man, bring it on.
Sounds good. It's got you hyped.
Mm, mad hyped.
Brilliant. Mm. Well, what did I watch? I watched a few things. Actually, touching on, we were talking about stuff in the world of streaming that you realize you can let go of. You don't have to persevere through.
Sure.
Because there's just so many other options. So I tried out the show You.
Yes.
First episode, I kind of liked the tone, was suiting whatever the mood I was in at the time. Second episode, I can see where this is going. I'm not sure. Third episode, I just don't find the characters endearing enough to sit through this. Episode four, yeah, this is the last one I'm going to watch.
I think there needs to be some sort of acceptance of diving out of stuff, because I struggle with it as well.
Yeah,
going,
you feel bad, don't you?
Yeah, you're like, I feel like I've committed to this. Maybe I should see it through. But I don't know. I think we need to go the other way and just Band-Aid rip it off.
Well, that's what I did. I realized that I was walking away, doing other stuff on my phone for the fourth episode, mm-hmm. and I didn't care to learn more about either of the main characters.
Sure.
And also, I don't know, the guy's mouth is funny when he's not talking. I don't know what it is. His lips do weird things.
Did he maybe have a cleft palate? Or is like, do you mean that sort of thing? Or he's like got a sneer?
No, I think one of the lips is too big. Maybe it's the upper lip that's a bit too big. But you know, with like someone like Liv Tyler, that's endearing and it looks quite cool. He's kind of just stuck out. Maybe I'm the only one who noticed. If you noticed, please email us.
thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I think he was in not the OC. What's that other show called? That what was the one where it was like XOXO?
Oh, Gossip Girl.
I think he might have been in that. Penn Badgley, I think his name is.
Sorry, can you say that properly? Penn Badgley.
Penn Badgley, I think his name is. He's in Easy A with, what's her name?
Emma.
I do like Emma.
Me too.
Maybe he was. Yeah, he was in Gossip Girl. And I'm sure there are people who thought he was absolutely amazing and how could I think that, but my brain thought that.
Send us a letter and tell us who your dreamboat from your youth that you're a bit embarrassed by now. And it can be either gender. We're not, you know, I used to think Adam Brody was probably dreamy. He was the guy that played Seth on OC. I thought, he's a nerdy guy.
I mixed up with that guy. I thought that's where the mixed up. Yeah, he was nerdy, but he was kind of good looking.
And he was nice.
Yeah, he was nice.
And so I thought he must be a bit of a heartthrob. And then I got a bit older. I'm like,
maybe not.
I think I just related to him as a character.
I actually am not embarrassed about this, but Keanu Reeves.
Sure. That does not make me say, whoa.
No. That's right. He's a very handsome man.
Mm.
He looks very sad these days. But the more I know about him, the more I appreciate him as well. Like, he's a pretty cool dude,
isn't he? He's a good guy.
He's one of the good guys.
He's one of the good guys.
What have you watched this week that you're pretty impressed with?
So Drunk History returned for the beginning of season six.
Cool.
They did an episode called Are You Afraid of the Drunk? It was only one person telling the story this week, which is quite unusual. And normally it's three people. But they had Rich Fulcher, who you might know from Mighty Boosh. And he was telling the story of Mary Shelley.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And the creation of Frankenstein. Now, Mary Shelley.
Nice.
So if you don't know Drunk History, they have one drunk person telling a story, narrating it, and then they use that audio and match it to people reenacting what they're talking about. But if they burp, the reenactors do that and this sort of stuff. So Mary Shelley
really
was played by Evan Rachel Wood from Westworld.
Yeah, yeah.
Elijah Wood was playing her husband.
Amazing.
They're not related in real life. I thought they were. Anyway.
I'm upset about that now. It had never occurred to me, but now I'm upset that it's not a thing.
Well, and Seth Rogen is playing Dr. Frankenstein, and Will Ferrell plays Frankenstein's monster.
What a strong return.
Yeah, it's really
wow.
And it was a great story. And at first I was like, how can they milk one episode out of that? And as it got into it and they got drunk around this campfire telling the story, I really understood why they needed the whole time.
Yeah,
for it.
Right.
It was fantastic.
Jeez.
The reenactors really got into it. And there's a few other people sprinkled in there that I'm not going to spoil. So you go and
give
see.
Give us some surprises, for sure.
But I never knew that. But basically, there was a drug and drink fueled orgy one weekend of some poets at the time that Mary Shelley attended with her future husband.
Yeah, right.
And at that same party, the idea for Frankenstein and Dracula was born.
No way.
Like vampires and reanimating the dead by electricity.
Enormously huge genres now.
Yeah. All came from one opium-fueled sexcapade weekend.
Imagine if that weekend just didn't happen.
Yeah. We'd be at a loss.
That's cool.
It's very cool. It's very cool. And they gave us a preview for the upcoming season. It looks like there's some really cool stories coming up.
Oh, so nice.
Jump on board now. Season 6 just starting.
And go for the ride so you can have that water cooler moment with your workmates.
Yeah.
They said it couldn't be done, but I just watched them put a baby in the corner. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I watched a movie that you may have heard about called The Favourite. I think it is one of two movies that have been nominated for 10 Academy Awards this year, including Olivia Colman for Best Actress. You've got Emma Stone again. Gosh, it's the Emma Stone episode. Emma Stone for Best Supporting and Rachel Weisz as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all in it. And it's got this quirky feel to it. Like the whole thing is just super quirky. It's got, what's his name? Nicholas Holt?
Sure, love that man.
Yeah, he's in it and you will love him in it.
Okay, is he playing Skins Nicholas Holt or is he playing X-Men Nicholas Holt?
Probably leaning more towards the Skins.
Yes, that's what I was hoping you were going to say because he was a prick.
He really was. He and was he the is worst. In this as well. There's a beautiful moment where he just decides to push Emma Stone into a ditch because that's how you introduce yourself to someone.
Oh, yeah, ditch bitch. Awesome.
And can I just say, I understand why Olivia Colman has gotten the Oscar nomination because her character as Queen Anne is super confusing, not in that, I don't know what's going on, you're just intrigued. You want to see more about her because you trying to figure out who she is, how she ticks, why she said that. Is that the real her? Is that a different her? It's not, she's not cunning in any way. Like, it's not necessarily part of the storyline. You're just intrigued about this character.
Awesome.
And it's done so well. And also, one of my favourite shows, as you know, is The Green Wing. And she was in The Green Wing and she was super endearing in that. And there are moments in this where she's super endearing as well. There are other moments where she's completely non-endearing. But yeah, really cool movie. Definitely go and check it out if you want to start ramping yourself into the Oscar nominations.
Sure.
And checking out those movies. Go and check that one. Because there's been quite a few. And I think when I looked at the list, I thought, oh, I think Tom's all right. You've seen Black Panther.
Yeah.
Have you seen Black Klansman? So you've seen two of them. Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favourite. Green Book is supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
Roma, which I love. If you've got Netflix, you can literally watch that now.
Yeah.
At any time.
It's crazy.
That's the other one that's been nominated for 10 Oscars. A Star is Born. I can't watch that because I already know it's sad, even though I know the ending already.
Oh, I just don't want to.
And Vice, which I spoke to somebody about.
I still
about
haven't
it.
Seen it. I'm dying to see it.
Look, one friend who watched it said she just went into it because somebody said, let's go watch it. And she really, really liked it.
Yeah, that was my experience
really
with The Big
it.
Short. And
yeah, right.
Director,
yeah,
actors,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. I'm still flabbergasted that Sorry to Bother You didn't get a look in anywhere because the further I get away from that film, the higher up it rises for me.
The more it means to you.
Yeah, and I'm kind of having a similar experience a bit with The Quiet Place.
Well, The Quiet Place did get, was it just?
Sound?
Yeah.
Which
is still.
Is what it deserves.
It's great that at least it's got that nomination.
Yes, I'm really happy with that, but I felt like maybe one of the two leads should have gotten a nom. They were both great. I don't know if it's being a father myself and watching a father in that situation made me elevate his performance, but there are moments in that he was fantastic.
Look, I suspect if somebody has watched Bird Box and quite enjoyed it but didn't get round to The Quiet Place, it's very much something that if you enjoyed Bird Box, Quiet Place is probably going to blow you out of the water.
Yeah, and watch it with headphones.
Yeah, okay.
It's the scariest thing I've ever seen with headphones.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, nice tip.
Yeah.
What else have you watched?
So I watched one that is proving quite contentious with some critics. I went along and saw Glass.
Yes. Now, you sent me a text a couple of days ago, or whenever you watched it, and you said that you watched it.
Yes.
And you're not sure how you feel about it.
Well, I've thought about it since then, and what I mean by that is I loved it,
mm-hmm.
but I can't recommend it.
Why?
Because
why?
I love it for reasons that are not film-based. This thing, it's very convoluted to try and explain, but my relationship with Unbreakable is so strong. That film means so much to me. And it came out at a time when no one treated superheroes seriously.
Mm.
You know, it was 10 years before Dark Knight. Mm. And so it was a completely different thing. And it was mismarketed. They sold it as a thriller. But when you actually watched it, this was a comic book superhero origin film told in the real world, really measured, really tempered.
Is that interesting, the way that it is marketed can have such big effect?
Massively so. Mm. And then they marketed Split as a psychological thriller.
Yeah, right.
And then there was a sting in the end, which I won't say if you've not seen, but to tie it into the Unbreakable universe. And then this film came along, and we're in a different time. We've had so many grown-up superhero movies. Everyone understands these tropes a lot more. So there's not that same element of surprise. But the film plays with the conventions of comic books more than it does with comic book movies. And so if you're an avid comic book fan, this is the thing I've seen a lot of people talk about online. People who've grown up with comics, loving comics, are getting extra stuff out of this film because we understand those tropes that happen in fiction, in the comics, on the printed page that can't translate well to screen. And he's found a way to subvert and play with a lot of those.
Right.
So that's what I mean. It's not one that I can just generally recommend to people because
it's coming from a really different direction.
It's so much so. And there is a twist. The twist isn't as satisfying as it could have been.
Okay.
But there's some stuff that happens around that twist that is the logical culmination of a comic book story in the real world.
So
and that's the part that satisfied me so much of if this shit happened in real life, what happens to them is what would happen.
I see. Yeah.
So I'm trying to be as cagey about this of like,
yep.
If someone had superpowers in our world, they wouldn't strap on a cape and jump into the world, jump into the sky and fly away and try and save everyone. They would skulk around in the shadows. They would be hunted. They would be hated.
This is the conversation that people have with their mates or whatever. When you talk about what superpower would you like, and then, you know, as the discussion goes on, you're like, well, I would have to, you know, if I wanted to fly, I'd probably have to fly at night so people couldn't see me because I don't want to be constantly on call.
And like Bruce's kid from the first film is back. It's the same actor playing him grown up.
Oh, cool.
And as I suspected, well, I know we talked about this, he's playing what is Oracle. So Batman has Batgirl. When Batgirl got shot by Joker and ended up in a wheelchair, she became Oracle and she is like the world's best hacker and runs his computer system. She's his eyes and everything. That's what he's doing for his dad.
That's cool.
But it has just these elements that floored me of like the first Unbreakable was about every child thinks their father is a superhero.
Mm.
But this film takes that to the next step of what if your father was a superhero and you weren't? How would that kneecap your maturity and your sense of self to the point of you live vicariously through someone who is greater than you? And, you know, everyone growing up has that moment that they realize their parents are fallible and they're not super. But what if that moment never happened for you? And then the government comes to tell you you're wrong.
Is that a theme that is very obvious, or is that a theme that you've had to think about? Like,
it's a bit of mix of both.
Okay.
There are moments when that's very strong.
Yeah. But I was just wondering if they had it simmering down the bottom.
That's more with the other two characters. So,
okay,
David Dunn, who Bruce Willis's character, has his son Elijah Wood, which is Mr. Glass, Samuel Jackson, has his mother return, and the Beast, James McAvoy, has the girl who got away, who was damaged as well. So they've each got these one connections, and they make a real point of calling that out, that they are the supporters, the supporting cast.
Okay.
And like Mr. Glass makes a joke about how it's not a true limited edition fight. It's not the end of a series until everyone's support characters show up. And they make, you know, some very blatant stuff, but it is that it's true. It's all based on the comic book tropes of it doesn't matter until the person who could die and impact the person who won't die.
Mm.
Until that situation comes together, the stakes aren't high enough.
Yep.
And so, I don't know, as I say, I loved it. I really loved it. I can understand why some people hate it. It's very divisive. It's not sold. Like, it's not the film that the commercials make it look like.
So once again, the marketing is letting it down.
Yeah, I think so.
And in terms of the other two films, if you went into this one without having seen the other two films, are you going to hate it?
Yeah. So
would that be perhaps why?
I think that's part of, I think you kind of need to see the other two films within a week of seeing this film.
Oh, really? And that's what you did?
Yes. Mm. Because there's no catch up. There's absolutely no, here's what happened, or do you remember it's just dropping you back in. And you remember?
It's not the second chapter of every Babysitter's Club book, which is just a, this is what's happened.
None of that. It literally starts 2 weeks after Split.
Really?
Yep. And there's no setup of here's what happened in Split, here's what happened on Unbreakable. I hope you paid attention. You could see it without, and I'm sure plenty of it will still make sense. Mm. But having just seen the other two, I got so much more out of it because there's cameos from someone who was a security guard in one film that may have been in the other film, and we didn't know if they were the same character, and this one confirms. And, you know, a few little things like that.
And even if you had seen the films before, but not recently, like you, not within a week, you would miss that. Yep. I know I would.
Yep.
Cool.
And I cried.
Well, that's good. That's given you an emotion.
Yeah. Well, look, as I say, it's finally seeing something on the big screen that comics has done for a long time that makes sense in a comic book world but is not a satisfying thing on film.
Yep.
They do it on film and it shows how unsatisfying it would be on film, but it's kind of like, I don't care that, like, he was, I don't care that this isn't what a film wants. This is what the story demands. And I think some of those elements is what's rubbing people.
Ballsy too that they decided to go with that. You know, to just stand there and go, nah, this is what we have to do.
Yeah, there's not going to be a fourth one.
You've got a trilogy.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Coming up soon, we'll have a quiz before our good game recap. Yes. Good game? Good place.
Good place.
Yeah, good place. Good recap. Place. The quiz is the game. But do you have anything else you want to have a chat about before we get into that?
Oh, look, some rapid fire ones. I'll just shoot them off real quick. So Corporate's back. That comedy, workplace comedy I love. They did an episode about the proximity crush. You know, that person that sits a desk away from you that you fall in love with that's not good looking and you can't stand. It's just they're the closest person. It was really, really clever. A new show called Backyard Envy I checked out. It's two guys and their female friend from school. They're called the Manscapers. And they do up New York high-rise gardens, and we're going to make them glorious.
And will they fabulous?
So fabulous. I'm not going to keep up with that show. It's just another backyard show.
So it's the kind of thing that if it was on television, you turn the television on and it was on, you'd eat dinner whilst watching it.
Yeah. Happy. Very positive, very good spirits and that sort of stuff. I checked out Dead by Dawn, which I had mentioned before. It's a new series on Nature Channel.
Okay.
One of the Nature Channels.
Yeah.
I can't remember what. But it's produced by Skybound, which is Robert Kirkman. And it's completely filmed in the style of horror films, but it's a nature documentary.
Yeah, I remember you talking about it.
It was really good.
You weren't sure.
I didn't think it would work, but the narrator is doing the best Tony Todd impression I've ever heard, like the Candyman.
Yeah.
And it's filmed in slow motion, darkness, red light and everything, but it's like, you know, a bat falls off the roof and lands in water where there's water monitors, like giant lizards that are going to come up and this thing is just desperately trying to crawl up the sand while it's wet. Mm. Wet wings can't take off yet while the lizard's coming behind it. The music's rising. The camera's panning in slower. And it dead set looks like one of the bits in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where Leatherface is chasing the girl down.
Yeah, right.
They've honestly used the same sort of angles.
How intriguing.
Brilliant. So I think this is going to be 6 episodes all up. Check it out, Dead by Dawn.
Oh, sounds great.
And then finally, I saw Bad Times at El Royale, which I've been hanging for. It's Drew Goddard, directing and writing, who I adore. He's the guy that did Cabin in the Woods. He worked on Lost, Daredevil, Punisher. Just so much good stuff.
Done a heap of good things.
It's set at a... Well, I think it's in the 70s, but it's set at a hotel, like a cheesy sort of motel that used to be super cool and the Rat Pack hung out at, that is... built halfway along the border between California and Nevada.
Yep.
And seven people arrive, and they all have very ulterior motives for being there. And there's a massive storm that happens. And throughout the film, we keep, you know, it cuts to room four, and we learn about what that person's doing at the hotel.
I like that kind of, yeah, structure. And
every time we see another person's story, we learn that the person before isn't there for what we saw them there for.
So each time you get not only that fresh story or fresh take, but you also are revisiting other takes.
That's right. And it's very, there's a film from the 50s called Rashomon. It's very much that style of piecemeal storytelling of keep going back and back and back and back and showing more. It's got Chris Hemsworth, John Hamm, Bill Pullman's son, Lewis Pullman.
What's going on with all these sons doing cool things?
Okay, Lewis Pullman is one of my, keep an eye on this actor, because I've seen him pop up in a few things and he's always really strong.
How much does he look like his dad?
Enough. Enough that
but without the floppy 90s hair.
Yeah, it's you don't look at him and go, oh, that's Bill Pullman's son. But yep. You look at you find out and you go, that's Bill Pullman's son.
Yeah, right.
It's one of those ones.
That's cool.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this film. It feels like early Tarantino. It's kind of, like I'd say, more Reservoir Doggy than Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Some full-on violence, as you'd expect. Jeff Bridges is having a whale of a time as someone who is definitely not who he appears to be.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, Hemsworth.
Really good?
Steals it.
Wow.
He plays someone that's a lot like, what's the bad guy in Far Cry 5? The leader?
Oh, yeah, the leader with the man bun and the yellow glasses. Yeah. Joseph, is it?
Yeah, Joseph.
Yeah.
He's basically playing Joseph, super charismatic cult leader in the 70s that may be very inspired by Charles Manson and maybe have women that go and do bad things for him.
What was this called again?
Bad Times at El Royale. And I read something that they came up with the title before they wrote the film. They were like, oh, really? I'll put that in the back pocket. That's
you
too good not to.
You know they'd watched Fast Times at Ridgemont High just beforehand. Yeah. They had. Any other things?
That's enough for you.
All right. We will get to The Good Place in a moment, but it is quiz time. We were talking about The Favourite, we were talking about The Crown, so I was like, oh, let's play Who Was Royal in What?
Okay.
So I'm going to say the character or the real life person and then what the film or TV show was, and then you have to say who the actor or actress was that portrayed that person.
Well, I am predicting failure.
No.
Unless you're doing deep sci-fi cuts and I've got to name who King Angron was.
I feel very confident that you're going to get into the 60% at
least,
minimum. Okay,
all right.
Princess Diana in the 2013 movie called Diana. As always, there are clues. Australian actress.
Naomi Watts.
Exactly.
Because who else could it be?
That was good.
Okay.
What about Queen Elizabeth in the 2006 film, The Queen? This person is...
Dame Judi Dench. Was
close.
She
close. It's another dame.
Maggie Smith.
It's the dame who's younger. She's got blonde hair. What else has she been in? Her initials are HM. Her Majesty? Her last name...
Helen Mirren.
Yes.
Okay. Because I was thinking of the one with Billy Connolly.
Yeah, I know. And that was definitely Judi Dench. Judy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mirren. Sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like the sexy dame, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Henry VIII in the Tudors TV show, which went from about 2007 to 2010-ish.
Yeah.
It's a bloke.
It's not Antonio Banderas.
No. I'm pretty sure he's Welsh, or at least part of
his
name indicates.
Is it Ion Griffith?
No, it's the other one. It's a three-parter name.
He's Jonathan Rhys-Myers? Yes. Yeah. He's dreamy.
He is quite dreamy.
Very dreamy.
Elizabeth I in the 1998 film called Elizabeth. Really sort of threw this Australian actress into the global spotlight.
Toni Collette?
No, the other one. She used to live around like Hunters Hill area in Sydney. She's won Oscars. She's very classy. She's got blonde hair.
Kate.
Yeah.
Okay. Blanche.
Blanchy. All right. Cersei Lannister, the Queen of Seven Kingdoms of Westeros in Game of Thrones. Actress name, please. LH. Are the
Lena
initials.
Headley.
Nice one.
I'm thinking back through my head. I'm like, come on, man. She's in 300. You know 300.
I know that so well because I've just been so busy in, like I said before, in like the Game of Thrones theories world. All my whole brain is just Game of Thrones at the moment. Finally, Queen Anne in The Favourite. We were talking about her. She was in The Green Wing.
Olivia Colman.
Yeah, that's right. That's it. Well done. See?
Thanks. Yeah, that was relatively painless.
It wasn't as painful as I could have made it, simply because my knowledge as well
so
is.
Deep.
Yeah.
That's what I was worried about, that you were going to start. Who played Princess Anne in what? That thing?
In The Tudors.
Yeah, you know.
Not playing that game, says Tom. Let's do another quiz.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1. You have been warned.
Nice one. Let's get into The Good Place. Now, you said something just before we started recording about The Good Place, a horrible realization that hadn't even occurred to me.
This week's the finale.
Oh.
Yeah.
One more episode.
Thursday night for America, Friday night for us. That's it.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I'll probably ask Janet. Yeah. She's experiencing feelings.
So at this point in time, this season, who's your MVP?
Cheaty. 100% Cheaty.
It's Janet for me.
Yeah?
That episode where Janet was everyone, or everyone was Janet, just swung it right round. I can't get that performance out of my head.
Look, in the same way, I'm just still back on Cheaty with the chili and like...
yeah, and the pink top.
Yeah, because I have had mental breaks and that was very relatable. But between that and then... Was it this week that he saw the time knife? Yeah, it was.
How good was that?
What a name for an episode. Cheaty sees the time knife. You don't need any more detail than that.
And what about Tahani with her scarf? Don't touch it.
Oh. So interesting fact with that that I loved, and I think it might have been a shout out to the Good Place podcast listeners, is that that alien thing around his neck was called a need nuggle.
Mm-hmm.
And the show's visual effects coordinator, like the guy that does all those effects, his name is David Neednuggle. And
that's cool.
He's that out there that on the podcast, they have started using neednuggling as a verb for when he adds weird shit in the background that's not no one's asked him to do.
Not needed.
So there's all this stuff you can go back, like especially season one when they were still in the good place, it wasn't really, of like he'd add a panda bear and a top hat go past for an eighth of a second in one shot way in the distance in the background.
Great. Now I'm going to have to watch every single episode
just
again.
Just for his own amusement. So he adds all this stuff in there. So that's, I thought it was so appropriate that that alien thing that no one's allowed to acknowledge has to be called
Need Nuggle. Okay. So cool. What about Cheaty disappearing?
He's so good.
Flying past in a miniature
With that, if you go back and watch the episode again, when they first walk in there, Cheaty's with them. But if you look really closely in the background, tiny Cheaty goes screaming past.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's all this stuff hidden in the back. Look at the doors really closely as they go past. Boo's door from Monsters, Inc. goes past.
No way.
Yeah, and I think maybe even a door from Stranger Things pops up.
Right, watching that episode again.
Yeah, all the doors are a reference to something. One one of them's Need Noggle's front door.
Of course.
Because
now I know the reference.
Uh-huh. But yet, apparently there's no one's gotten all of the layers of what he hid in there yet. But apparently it's just he wanted to try and combine as many different pop culture famous doors as possible.
But that's good, right? Because now we're going to have to wait for the next season.
And it gives us something to unpack and delve into.
And I'm going to be, you know, by the time June rolls around, I'll be over Game of Thrones. So I'll have to have something to look into, theories and whatnot.
Is there anything on TV that's as smart as The Good Place?
I really don't think there is.
I don't think so. Because for a while there, it was very clever. But this season, you look at this past episode, right? they walked into the interdimensional Hall of Pancakes, which then got reskinned to look like an international House of Pancakes. Yep. That then got reskinned to look like a conference room at an airport. They then went to the Medium Place. Mm-hmm. And out the back of the Medium Place, they've built a replica of
the original good, bad place. Which is, yeah, yeah.
What the fuck? That's in 21 minutes.
They hit us with it.
You know what we haven't even mentioned yet?
What's that?
Derek.
How good was it?
Oh.
What was your favorite? My favorite one was not the lemon. It was the
olives?
Yeah.
There's another great story. Well, they tell a story of that on the podcast as well, is that the Foley artist, like the boom operator, could not stop laughing because every time an olive fell, it would go boom, 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 boom. And he'd sit off camera when the rest were trying to act and pour olives on himself just to, like, the guy who plays Derek, Jason Mantzoukas, he is out to make Sean laugh.
Yeah, okay.
That's all he wants to do is to make Mark Evan Jackson laugh because Mark does not laugh. He's very serious. So he said he spent that day tipping olives on himself, making Mark laugh. And Ted Danson came up to him at the end of the day and was like, Jason, I had a really good day today. Thank you. I have enjoyed watching you terrorize Mark all day.
And we finally saw the flossing.
Yeah.
Which we'd seen.
Paid off.
Ages ago.
What happened first? Were they teaching him how to floss film for the show and then filmed it? Or was he learning from them how to floss and then they wrote that in for Michael's character later? I feel probably the first.
I think so too. I think that's the exact reason. And then they went, oh, quick, put that on social media.
But what a great thing. I've got to distract an interdimensional. Yeah, I'll do the floss.
So good. It's great now because what I'm not sure if people are going to be listening to this because if you have been waiting for this season to finish before you start, because I know a lot of people like to watch this as one big binge-a-thon.
Sure.
This is going to be a lot to take in.
Oh, yeah.
Like every episode, something completely different happening in a completely different setting. And to sit there and watch like three or four of those episodes all in one go for the first time, I don't think I could do it.
No.
The other seasons, like particularly season one, you can 100%
do
that.
Yeah, you can blaze through that, no probs. But this one is just breakneck.
It's too much going on. One episode a week is more than enough.
I mean, it's ridiculous to think that it was probably only six episodes ago that Simone went out of the picture, and she got mentioned by Chidi this week.
And feels like ages ago.
Simone, oh yeah.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
So I think we were wrong when we were guessing who might be coming. If they're redoing The Good Place.
Yep.
Of you know, I know I talked a lot with Lindsay about who might be the, do you choose who the soul you're bringing in and stuff. It looks like they're not going that way.
It looks fresh.
I'm excited because the guy that was sitting on the couch waiting to be awoken.
Do you know the actor?
Not personally. he is known as a UCB improv legend.
UCB?
Upright Citizens Brigade. So that's what Amy Poehler, Matt Walsh from Veep, Matt Besser. Basically, four people that started their own improv style in the late 80s, early 90s and created a movement. And there are now UCB theatres in LA. I think Chicago might have one, but they're very much on their second city.
Mm.
And New York, and if you can get in at UCB, it's a fast track to success.
To everything.
And there are some people that go through UCB and instantly go off to become a star.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other people who intentionally stay and they're like mentors and build people up and they have shaped what comedy is today. The guy on the couch is one of them.
Ooh.
He's the guy on the couch is who the actors, like especially the comedian actors, are excited about having on the show.
Wow.
Because he will, in the same way that Derek is a complete loose cannon and makes it exciting for them to come to work, that's what they're saying this guy could be. But on the opposite end of the super sweet, he could be playing a super sweet nice guy or he could be playing a scumbag that they have to redeem.
So how much do you reckon his lines will be improv then? If you're going to get one of the mentors of improv, surely you're going to give him room.
From what I know about him, I think it's going to be more reactions and facial expressions that he gets to improv.
Okay.
I think
which doesn't sound like much, but if you are someone who is that good,
part of the beauty of improv is it's one of the only fields where being the straight man is just as important. You've got to have someone who's there who can stay blank-faced and who takes it in and sets things up for the other people. He's going to be a more serious character, I imagine, because he won't know what's going on in this crazy world. All the other people understand and have extra knowledge. So if he's just there being constantly put upon, I think that'll work really well because he gives something for the others to bounce off.
So I'm looking forward to see who the other three will be.
I know.
I mean, I assume we're doing three more.
I hope there's some really good casting there. I hope, like, I'm cool if three of them are like comedy hero people like that.
What if there's Amy Poehler? What if there's Tina Fey?
I think one of them needs to be a big name. It would be very cool.
You've already got Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited.
They had in this episode as well, not only did they have those locations, you had Mindy St. Clair, mm-hmm. you had Derek, you had Sean, and you had Jen. And very briefly, the doorman.
Yeah.
Smells like frogs.
Big episode and a bigger one that will happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this today on the day of release.
It'll be out soon.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about it next week.
We sure will. Until then, I think we've done more than enough talking and we've got to get back to watching. Tom, good luck with your watching endeavours.
Chick, chick, boom.